so those 20 tons he's talking about are big annual. Bidwell Park and Chico Creek's cleanup. It happens in September. This September 16th, we're celebrating our 30th annual Bidwell Parks and Chico Creek's cleanup, which is
a
huge thing. So he had been talking about 20 tons, and I wanted to share with you some of the numbers. So in the 30 years now that we've been doing creek cleanups, we have pulled out 172 tons of garbage from our local creeks and waterways. And so that's pretty exciting. For a snapshot of that, in 2015, which was one of our biggest years, we pulled 30 tons in one day out of the Chico Creeks and Parks.
Awesome. So now we're going to hear from two youth from the Sustainability Club right now from Chico High here on People Power Radio.
With me here today, I have
Jesselyn Ayers, president of the Chico High Sustainable Practices Club,
and Malak Saleh, a member of the Chico High Sustainable Practices Club.
And we are so glad to have you guys here today to talk a little bit about your club and about creek cleanups. So if we could start out, if you could tell me, why did you form your sustainability club at Chico High, and what goals are you trying to accomplish?
Well, this club was formed a few years ago by a girl who wanted to major in environmental studies at Berkeley. And when I took over this year, I had the goal of getting it more involved with the community. So our goals are to improve sustainability in ways that we can as high school students, whether in our personal lives or at our high school and the community.
And why did you decide to join?
I joined last year because a lot of my friends were already part of the club and I wanted to see what it was about. And then I continued my membership because I thought it would be a great way to get involved with the environment and the community and how we treat our city in general. And so that's why I joined.
Awesome. How do you guys feel like participating with the creek cleanups fit into your goals?
Well, participating in the creek cleanup is really important to us because it's in our community. We both visit the parks regularly and, you know, oftentimes you'll be walking through the park and you'll see a lot of things that don't belong there. And we feel as if, you know, we are part of this community. It is our job to take care of what we see and make sure that everything is sustained and everything is clean and beautiful, because our parks are really genuinely so beautiful. And we just want to make sure that we are part of maintaining that beauty.
The next question is pretty similar, and it's about why you wanted to get involved with our creek cleanups.
Yeah, it's something that's easy to do, and we can get involved with it. They're every month, so it's easy to have some concrete progress in our goals.
And I would love to hear if you could each share what your best experience has been so far with the creek cleanup.
Well, my best experience so far is always like looking back on what we've done, the progress we've made in cleaning up these different areas. And it's really important because there are so many different parts of the creek. It runs through the entire city of Chico. There are so many different areas you can be part of cleaning up. And so looking back on the progress that we've made, and oftentimes we'll end our day with heaps upon heaps of garbage and trash and all these different materials that shouldn't have been there. And it's really inspiring to see what we can do in just a few hours.
How about what was your best experience?
Well, there's always something interesting at the park cleanup. The last time we went, I picked up a plastic container on the bank of the creek, and underneath it was this teeny tiny snake, which I later found out is a California sharp-tailed snake, and they're pretty rare, and they eat mostly slugs. So it's things like that. You look at the creeks when you start, and it's covered in trash, but when you finish, you realize that it's a nature space, it's a green space, and it's really interesting and important, and it's what makes Chico what it is.
Why would you tell people to come and join the effort?
I would personally tell people to come and join the effort because it's actually so much fun. You'd think that going to a park and just cleaning up a bunch of trash is kind of boring, a boring way to spend your time. But we do it as a group with our friends, and a lot of times we're laughing and finding weird things that, you know, you normally wouldn't find on an average day. And we have these interesting experiences that we wouldn't have otherwise if we weren't part of this. And also we are playing a big part in keeping the creeks clean and making sure that things don't get washed downstream or eaten by animals when they shouldn't be. And so that's why I think people should definitely join this cause.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's always interesting. It always sort of reminds me of archaeology or something. And it's quite rewarding.
So if you could give us a quick 60 seconds on what sustainability means to you.
to me, sustainability is really all about making sure that our environment stays pristine for future generations. A lot of times people take for granted what we have, and we just want to be part of making sure that it's there for future generations. You know, if we want to have kids, we want our kids to be able to visit these parks and the creeks and to see them just as beautifully as we did. And it's all about protecting the world in general. We want to be part of protecting the environment, protecting species that are in our local environment, and we want to be able to sustain the earth as it is for future generations in general.
Well, that's great. I really appreciate you guys coming down, and thank you for being a part of this. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to be here and to participate in our cleanups.
All right. Thank you so much for having us.
I am Natalie Carter, the Executive Director for the Butte Environmental Council. And here with us, we have Mark Gailey. Mark, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Mark Gailey. I'm a retired Chico Unified School District educator and a longtime Butte Environmental Council environmental volunteer.
We're going to start off with an interesting question. Mark, could you tell me, what does sustainability mean to you?
Well, being that the format for tonight's discussion has to do with keeping the park clean and the waterways cleaned, my idea of sustainability is keeping those entities healthy. And that means keeping them free of litter and debris and oil products so that people can go ahead and appreciate them. And nature appreciates them as well.
Absolutely. Like you said, you have a long history of being involved with Beck's Creek cleanups. Can you tell us about your first creek cleanup and why you were so happy to get involved that first time?
Well, I just moved to Chico in the 1980-81 vicinity. I got a job at Chico High, and I got involved pretty quickly with the Butte Environmental Council, which at the time was the only really recycling center around. And through their efforts, I got familiar with Courtney Casey, who is intimately involved with the startup of the cleanups, the first Bidwell Park cleanups. Courtney and a bunch of his environmental buddies would volunteer to clean up the park, and it eventually got sort of handed over to Beck. I think Courtney was working with Beck, but Beck took a more coordination role. I was happy to get involved because, man, it was right down my alley. I was a 15-season seasonal park ranger with the National Park Service, and, man, I've got this big, beautiful park in my backyard of my new town, and I wanted to help it out.
That's great. And so now, fast forward to modern times and modern day, can you tell us about your role in Beck's big annual cleanup, the Bidwell Parks and Chico Creeks cleanup that happens in September?
Well, I can't remember exactly when it started. I do remember that I loved my role as a volunteer cleaning up. I was a good cleaner-upper of these parkways. I could find trash that nobody else could find. But at some point in time, I was asked to man the volunteer sign-in station at Hookerok Recreation Area. And, you know, I was a school principal at one point in time, vice principal and all of that, and even a teacher. It was right down my alley, and so I really didn't have the hands-on experience like I was used to, but I was able to direct people and try to give them the same enthusiasm to giving them an assignment, give them a bag, give them some gloves, have them go clean their particular areas. And it's been very, very rewarding.
So you do the dispatch, right? So the label that we put on your role at the creek. And so you have this huge map that you put out in front of you, and you send people out to all the different areas in the creeks all over town. And I am totally fascinated to watch you assign those. And it's such a huge process. You know, I'm kind of wondering if you could share a little bit about, like, your methodology for when you have these groups come up to you and you're trying to send them out to somewhere in the creek.
Right.
How do you approach that?
Well, invariably, if the cleanup starts at 9 o'clock, at 9:05 or 9:10, you've got 40 or 50 people just ready to go. They're chomping at the bit to clean up. And there's a lot that needs to be done. I mean, there's paperwork that needs to be filled out in terms of waivers mm-hmm. for liability. There's stuff to be handed out. There's assignments to be signed. Now, my favorite, especially at the beginning stages, is to ask the people, do you have a favorite area that you would like to go clean up mm-hmm. right now? And you'd be amazed. My favorite area is Bear Hole. Oh, yeah, I like Salmon Hole. I like this. I like that. That works beautifully to get people started. And then I keep track on the map to see where I've assigned people, and more holes open up, or more obvious spots open up where more people need to be assigned.
Why are you so passionate to have more people join the cleanup effort?
I told the folks here at the radio station that this is my opportunity to talk about my dad. My father was an environmentalist way before it was in vogue. He was the first person I knew that ever subscribed to Mother Jones magazine. I mean, my father was a staunch liberal and a great environmentalist. He loved the beach. We'd go to the beach as a family, and my father would pick up bags. He'd walk along the beach and pick up trash, and to this teenager behind him, it sent me into just huge embarrassment. I thought, oh my God, people are seeing my dad do this. Well, anyway, I'm 65 years old, and I'm doing the same damn thing. So I am enthusiastic. I think if people took a daily effort to clean up the parks and waterways, we're never going to control this thing, but we can keep the damage down, and it pays off. I'm going to say the day after the cleanup is the best time, the absolute best time to go into Bidwell Park or any of our waterways. It's the cleanest it's going to be all year.
I totally agree, and I'm glad to hear that you're carrying on your family legacy of cleaning up trash. Could you leave us with some advice that you might have for ongoing efforts to keep the parks clean between our cleanups?
Absolutely. I've given this a lot of thought. One is follow my dad's model. Anytime you know you're taking the dog into the park or going for a walk or going for a swim, going for a picnic, bring a trash bag, not just for your trash, because I know you're going to take it out, but other trash that you encounter on the way. I'm not talking about diving into bushes and getting that stuff, but stuff that's obvious and there and along the trail makes a huge difference. Another thing I'd like to do is to recommend that folks take responsibility for shopping carts. We encounter shopping carts out of place all over our community. And people are always thinking, why doesn't someone come and pick these darn things up? The problem is they often end up in the creeks a lot of the time. If you have a truck or you have a van, follow my example. Load that errant shopping cart into your vehicle and take it back to the store where it is supposed to reside. If everyone did that when they saw shopping carts, that would be good. More along the shopping cart line, we've got a community of large apartment complexes. And another prevalent problem in town is people who borrow shopping carts at the store, often people who don't have cars, often elderly folks, and they wheel their shopping cart with all their groceries back to their apartment complex and leave it. Buy one of those collapsible little two-wheeled shopping carts. Those are awesome. You'll never need to take a shopping cart to your apartment, and once it's at the apartment, it's going to end up in the creek, I guarantee it. And then the last thing I'd like to say is I would like to encourage people not to leave, not to be so kind-hearted and leave their couch or their plush chair or their mattress in front of their home with a sign on that says free, because those darn things end up down in the waterways, they get rained on, and they're almost impossible to pick up. Kudos to the Chico State Associated Students for organizing recycling centers at the end of semesters. But we need to not put our furniture out in front of our house with a free sign on it. We mean well, but it ends up in the creeks as homeless encampment furniture, and that's not a good place for it.
Well, I think those were some great pieces of advice, and I so very much appreciate you taking the time to come down here and share with us about your experiences with cleaning up creeks and give the listeners out there an opportunity to get inspired and get out there and pick up some trash and make a difference in their community.
My pleasure. So. Thanks so much. Sorry for my passion, but
oh, that's definitely not something to apologize for.
Youth for Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KGFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, the state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festivals and events, including Arttoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org and by Barnett Wallpaper and Painting. When your home office needs a fresh coat of paint, wallpaper removed or applied, or walls repaired and textured, it's time to call Tim Barnett. For over 25 years, Chico residents have relied on the quality, friendly service of Barnett Wallpaper and Painting. Bonded and insured with complimentary estimates available. Call or text him at 321-5603 and at barnettpaint.com.
Give it up for the Environmental Council. Give it up right now. Mark Alexander, our in-studio correspondent, is going to give us some of his comments on that piece. Thank you, Mark.
Hey there, this is Mark. It makes me so hopeful to see people interested in environmentalism, and I love the idea of going out and cleaning out creeks and ponds. I remember living on a dirt road and on Dunstone near Orville, and I always just kind of walked by, and people would regularly just dump their trash out there because they can get away with it, and it really breaks my heart to see that happen. And I love the thought that everyone can, how much could we accomplish if everyone just cleaned up a little, as the gentleman who was on talking about. And it reminded me of this this video I watched. I'm actually learning Japanese at Butte College right now. And I remember watching a video about how in Japan, they don't actually, most schools don't actually employ janitors because they actually require the students to clean up the school. And that's, I think it'd be great if we had that kind of mentality where it was a human responsibility to clean up things, to clean up stuff. I think everyone's, walked down the street and seen like a whole bunch of cigarette buds and, seen some junk people threw out, which they could have very easily just thrown away. And I think it'd be great if we could instead spend our time making the world a cleaner place and protecting our animals and plants. And yeah.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you. All right, turning it over to Alex.
All right. Hi, Radio Land. This is your other host, Alex, and I'm very excited today because we are here with one of the most active and awesome clubs from Chico State. We are here with the Stop Club. So, guys, before we get going, why don't you introduce yourselves? Just we'll go around.
Awesome. Okay. My name is Joseph Esparza, and I am the current STOP president this semester. I'm here with a few of my colleagues, so I'll pass.
My name is Robert Ontiveros. I am vice president of STOP, and
Hello. My name is Maria Pineda, and I'm the STOP outreach officer.
Okay, so right now you're probably wondering what STOP is and what we'd like to do on campus. So STOP as itself is an acronym for Stop Trafficking of Persons. We're an active club on campus, student-led organization, and what we do is we try to spread awareness and educate the community at large as well as the students on campus about the global crime known as human trafficking. And there's many different forms of it, seven if I believe. There's there's sex trafficking, there's forced labor, bonded labor, involuntary domestic servitude, and overall it's just an international crime. The U.S. federal law defines it as the exploitation of another person through the use of force, fraud, or coercion. So, yes.
Excellent. This is a topic that I feel doesn't get talked about a lot. We definitely, if we dig a little bit, we can see human trafficking touch almost every industry, almost every aspect of life in a way. But this is one that sort of flies under the radar. So I'm very glad you guys are here with us today. Now, this club has been around for a little while now, right?
Yes, since about 2005. This was started by students. I mean, we had one of our advisors, Yanya Lalik, did a lot of lecturing and specifically looked into human trafficking and did a lot of presenting on it in her classroom. And it was this club was started by some of her students who decided to take action.
Great, great. I believe her social movements class, I think, as the legend goes.
That sounds about right, yeah.
As it were. So tell us, you've told us a little bit about what human trafficking is, kind of in the broad sense. Why is this a relevant conversation for us to have in Northern California?
Mainly is because California as a whole is a hotspot for trafficking. It has the most human trafficking cases of any state in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I-5, the largest highway going through California, is a huge bloodline for human trafficking and for trafficking victims to move through.
Yeah. And there's also a circuit of human trafficking in Northern California, and specifically here in Chico, Corning, Red Bluff, Redding. So it really pertains to the area.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but there was actually a recent case that is being discussed as a human trafficking case and investigated. It was Sherry Panini. She went missing a couple mm-hmm. months back, and it plastered all over the news. She was found close to Yolo County around that area, just over 100 miles away from home. And she was found with burn marks. Her hair was cut. She was found bruised, beaten, and restrained. And it's being investigated as a human trafficking case, mainly because that burns that she has, it looks like it could be branding. And branding mm-hmm. is something that does happen within the human trafficking world.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you know, human trafficking, when we hear about it on the news, we tend to not think of it as something that happens at home in our own backyard. We tend mm-hmm. to think of it as somewhere else, in air quotes. I can't show you my air quotes, but mm-hmm. there are air quotes implied on that. So tell us a little bit about maybe some of any statistics or any signs maybe of human trafficking that people could look for.
Sure. So there's a few signs of human trafficking. Just to name a few, like you could see somebody who avoids eye contact, maybe has some physical abuse noticeable, or malnourishment, signs of drug use, few or personal possessions, missing school or homeless. Also, a lot of our foster youth is at very high risk of human trafficking. It's said that 1 in 3 homeless foster children will be approached by a trafficker within the first 48 hours of mm-hmm. becoming homeless. So yeah, it really is just being more aware of the signs, and that was just naming a few, but there is more.
Actually, me and Maria here just went on a 6-hour training over at Dubuque College this past Friday, and we learned a lot, especially about child trafficking. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because they were telling us a bunch of these stories, right? And it kind of put us in this perspective of somebody being trafficked or somebody looking into trafficking another person. Mm-hmm. So there was this one story that I found that was really crazy. This black man had kidnapped a young girl. I believe she was the age of 13, and the average age of somebody who's trafficked in the United States is 12 years old. So, and this girl was around 13. And what happened was they were traveling along a highway, and they were stopped by police officers, right? And right away, they knew something was suspicious about this, because the young girl in the back was, whenever she was spoken to, she always looked towards the driver for like approval to say something. And of course, the police officers didn't know like what human trafficking like really was, or like this could be a case, of course, because there's a large percent of our law enforcement who's not educated on the topic of human trafficking. So, that's another sign that you can tell is somebody who's like not like very like shy, or like somebody's looking for approval. Somebody has signs of like trauma. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's just crazy.
Interesting. This is a topic we cover in one of my classes as well, and it seems like there's been a little effort, as you touched on the idea of there not being a lot of training out there for mm-hmm. law enforcement and for others, and it's my understanding that recently flight attendants have been getting some training to look for the signs, especially around Super Bowl weekend, which is one of our largest human trafficking events in the country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with this, we can see that even our people in our community who are supposed to help us and are there for us might be lacking in training. And, you know, that can speak to a little bit of our level of awareness as a society about this project, or this problem, I should say, and the efforts to try to help it. But so what could people do to help this huge issue? What would your suggestions be?
Okay. Well, I think one of the problems in our society still, like in the media and some people who like don't really view it as trafficking and like as viewing these victims as victims, some people still view it as, you know, that's prostitution. She's doing it willingly. She's doing this because she wants to. Whereas, you know, in the large majority of the cases, this is true victimization. They're forced, they're coerced, you know, practically brainwashed to believe that this is the life that they're living, that it's like survival for them. It's that fight or flight technique that we have. Mm-hmm. This is their survival, the only way that they can live, and they don't see really a way out of it sometimes. So I believe one way that we can help fix this problem is just, it's simple, but it's educating the public and the community, law enforcement, teachers, everyone, that this isn't something to be viewed as, you know, she's doing it willingly, but they're victims, they're forced, and just people knowing that in general will be one big help to this problem. So
yeah, and that being said, Joseph, also, I think it's important for people to know that it can happen to men or women, children. Mm-hmm. It cuts across everything. It could be any race, any age. So yeah, it's just really important to keep those things in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The same goes for people of who are foreign, because over 40,000 people are trafficked into the United States from other countries. Down in Mexico, cartels are making a lot of money from kidnapping women from villages and forcing them into doing sex work. And some of them even trade women with gangs, sell them to them. And the same goes for women out in East Asia. There are a lot of gangs out there. They kidnap women. They force them into forced marriages. And they even track them into the United States for sex work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is not the stuff we always hear about on the news. So I'm glad to hear you guys are making an effort to make the community more aware. And you know, as we see, with awareness comes help. So, what has STOP been up to lately? What are you guys doing, you know, in our community or on our campus to help with this?
Well, towards the end of March, we're going to be having, it's going to be Human Trafficking Awareness Week, and we're going to be holding a big spring conference, Break the Chains, Be the Change. We're going to be having our, here you go, Joseph.
Oh, no, the mic.
Oh, so it's going to last from Monday through Tuesday, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. In Bell Union Memorial Union Auditorium at Chico State. On Monday, on the 27th, we're going to have a law enforcement and service provider panel with FBI agents, local law enforcement, and other service providers who are going to tell us a lot about human trafficking and their experience with it. And on Tuesday, we're going to have Carissa Phelps. She is a former human trafficking survivor, and she's going to be giving us her story. She's going to inspire the crowd. And on Wednesday, we're going to have a keynote speaker, Rebecca Bender. She's going to speak about her experience about being trafficked and how she recovered.
Quick little fact about Tuesday. So that trafficking, how I got certified to recognize the signs on that training, that's something you guys, everyone can do who comes on Tuesday to see Carissa Phelps give her speech. Everyone who comes will be certified and knowledgeable about how to recognize the signs. So I believe all this information is on our website as well, Stop Trafficking a Persons, if you guys would like to check that out.
Yes, and also all the events are free of charge, and you can walk out of there with a certification on human trafficking awareness and recognizing the signs. For students, it's a huge resume builder. It looks really good. And also, it's just, I mean, it's good to know. Bring awareness.
Yeah, this is an important thing to note. You know, college students can be victims of trafficking, and I mean, this applies across ages, across education levels, as you mentioned. So it's, you know, it's important to recognize these signs for fellow classmates, even. Mm-hmm. So, and this is the third awareness week, or how?
Six.
Oh, I'm behind the times. Sorry, Dr. Lalich.
Whoopsie daisy.
Great, and it's been really cool to see you guys tabling on campus. And do you find that you know, students are coming to your meetings from your tabling experiences, or how did you guys, I guess, get involved in the club? Would be my biggest question.
Yeah, definitely. We do get some students that, you know, we meet at tabling, and they just start asking questions and get really excited about finding out more about this. You know, I'll mention to them, like, this is the largest slave trade in history, and they just immediately want to know more, what they can do about it. actually, I had somebody come up to the tabling that we were doing, and she asked a few questions, and she went to her very first meeting and became an intern that same day. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. We have some pretty passionate people on campus, and we just love seeing them come attracted to our club, so...
That's so great, and you guys definitely, when I think of clubs on campus, you're one of the first ones I think of, because you guys are so visible, and you have people out there, and it's definitely a project worth getting involved in and getting passionate about. And you told me, I think when we were initially having our conversation, that anybody can come and see what you guys are all about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Our meetings are free and open to the public, so every Thursday this semester from 6 to 7 p.m. and Glen 123. So
wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming here today, and we hope you'll come back and tell us more about what the Stop Club is doing. Mm-hmm. And keep doing all these great things. I'm proud of you guys, and I have to just do a shout out to Dr. Lalich, who is my mentor teacher, and basically introduced me to the subject of human trafficking, which now I in turn pass on to my students. So we were just having the conversation today about how she taught me everything I know, and it's a true statement. So mm-hmm. It's nice to be in the room with others in that same boat. So with that, Mr. Mash, what do we have?
I think we should hear from Mark Alexander, our in-studio correspondent, and hear how this mic is working. If it's not working too well, we'll put you over there, okay?
Good to know, because, you know, it's pretty disappointing if people can't hear me. I told people I'd be on the show tonight. This is a really important story, and I'm, you know, I think it's hard for me to really soak in that this thing really, this sort of stuff really happens, and that's so common in California and even in Chico, especially since that comment about homeless being confronted with possibility of human trafficking within 48 hours of becoming homeless, especially, you know, since I was a homeless person for quite a while, and I hang out with a lot of homeless people who at the Sixth Street Center for Youth, you know, who are mostly, you know, youth who are kids who are underage, and the thought just it worries me to think that maybe they're going to experience that, and they may experience that before. And personally, I think it would be great. I personally would actually like to become educated and certified in seeing those sorts of signs. So I'm definitely interested in checking that out. I personally, the certain signs they spoke of, like avoiding eye contact, malnutrition, you know, I've seen things like that with some people. You know, it comes from a form of abuse and trauma that some people experience, and being able to recognize that and know who to talk to and know who to contact and know how to help would be really important. And that's my one cent.
You know, I think what I would add to that is I literally was a homeless teen at 76 in Boston, and I was approached probably within 48 to 72 hours standing on a street corner for sex in downtown Boston. So this is a real critical issue. I'm so glad that you were able to bring your students in here, Alex, to help us educate on it and this event. Maybe we should do a shout out for this event again.
Yes. Yeah, one more time if you guys want to throw the important info out.
Yeah, definitely. So, again, they're all free events open to the public in the Bell Memoriam Union Auditorium from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m., and it's going to be March 27th through the 29th. And that certification is going to be on Tuesday, March 28th.
Excellent. And is there a website if somebody wanted to look up this stuff?
You can look up Stop Trafficking of Persons Chico, and I'm sure it will pop up.
Great, great. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Now, I think we have a piece from Josh Indar, right?
Yeah, we certainly do. This is a foster youth that he'd gone down to a conference, Alex. It was a weekend conference, the same weekend that we evacuated 180,000 people in Northern California.
Ooh, yeah.
So this is a really poignant story about, you know, what happened while they were down there, down in Sacramento, how they had to make emergency plans to come back, and just what happened to this young lady in the midst of all of this. It's a beautiful piece.
Yeah, yeah. I got a little choked up listening to it earlier today, for sure.
Yeah. So here we go. Thanks for listening to People Powered Radio. ...074 East Avenue, Suite K1. Agua Azul offers a full range of spa services, including massage, pedicures, body wraps, wellness programs, weight management, and detox products. A gift certificate to Agua Azul also makes the perfect gift for any occasion. Let Agua Azul be your life. Renewed resource 345-0226 or visit a2oasis.com. We're also made possible this hour by Live Life Juice Company, producing locally fresh cold-pressed juices and elixirs. Find the Live Life Juice Company at Wednesday and Saturday, Chico Farmers Market, and at 2208 6th Street between Broadway and Salem, weekdays from 10 to 6 p.m. For more information, visit livelifejuiceco.com on Facebook and by calling 566-3346. Live Life Juice Company, pure fresh juice. Drink to your health.
Hi, this is Josh Shindar reporting for Youth for Justice. This week's story is a bit different than the one I thought I was going to bring in today. Originally, I was doing a story on our local chapter of the California Youth Connection, attending the annual Day at the Capitol conference in Sacramento, which is when a few hundred foster youth descend on the Capitol to try to pass legislation to reform the foster care system. I'll try to bring you that story next time because, as you'll hear, our conference visit did not quite go how we thought it would. On the weekend of February 12th, our local CYC chapter took a group of six youth and two adult supporters to the Holiday Inn Sacramento, where the conference was held. Everything was going really well. Our group understood the issue. They all had great public speaking skills. We practiced hard. We got great reviews on our mock legislator visits. So by the second day, we were confident we could get this bill to pass. We were taking a break between workshops, checking our social media, and that's when we found out that there was something really wrong going on back home.
The following message is transmitted at request of the Butte County Emergency Management and the Oroville.
Now, I've done some reporting on the dam in the past, so I knew that this was a big deal. There's 3.5 million acre feet of water in Lake Oroville. That's enough to flood Connecticut a foot deep. Everyone went from conference mode to crisis mode, sending texts and checking news, just trying to figure out what was going on.
Areas are ordered to evacuate to high ground immediately.
Two of our youth live in Oroville, so they were immediately worried about family and friends. Since the alert said the dam could fail within the hour, we had to decide on a course of action right away. One of our members got on the phone with a retired firefighter she knew who told us we needed to take the warning seriously and stay off the 99 and the 70, which were being closed. Everything was happening really fast. We decided quickly to try and make our way back, not knowing exactly what we would find at home. I'll now turn the story over to Amy, one of the youth that had gone to the conference with us.
My name is Amy Middlecoff. I'm 24 years old. I'm a former foster youth. I was placed in foster care, I think I was 8. I'm not 100% sure. I might have been 10. Mm-hmm. We went down to Sacramento for a conference called DAC that pulls CYC members from all over California together to try to get a new bill passed. I thought it was going pretty well up until we broke off into our fourth workshop groups. At the end of our third workshop, my mentee, Marisa, was not feeling well, so I took her up to the room and I laid her down. At the end of the workshop, I told her I would be back to pick her up so that we can break up into our chapter groups. And when I went up there to pick her up, everybody was crying. And I asked what was wrong, and that's when I was told about the dam failure and about the evacuation, how we only had 60 minutes to get everybody we loved out of Oroville.
Yeah.
But my first thought was of my daughter. I needed to make sure she was safe. Her dad was at work. I was in Sacramento, and she was at home with a babysitter that I didn't know.
How old is your daughter?
My daughter's 15 months.
Yeah.
When I was going out of town for this, we had looked really hard for someone who was qualified to watch her, and we ended up going with one of my husband's coworkers. So when the evacuation started, I tried to call her, but her phone, sorry, her phone doesn't get service where we live. So I wasn't able to get a hold of her, and I called my husband, and he said, I'm on my way home. And then I thought of my dad and his son, and I wasn't able to get a hold of them, so I told my husband to call, and he said he'd already called, but they didn't answer. So that was like my second thought was, where's my brother at? Because he's only three, and he kind of needs someone to look after him. So after slightly panicking and having a minor breakdown, I finally got a hold of him and told them to go up to my house, that they'd be welcome there as long as the evacuation was in place. And then I went back to my room and started packing. I woke up Marisa and told her that we had to go, and she thought I was joking, so I was really angry.
Can you describe kind of the scene, just when we were trying to decide what to do? Do you remember that? We were kind of like...
Well, your room and Eileen's room were conjoined, so everybody was like packed into your guys' rooms. You guys were all saying we had to go, but nobody was sure who was leaving or where we were going or how to get back because all of the roads were closed. So I'm not quite sure how the path was decided on. I don't think I was there for that part. I think I'd taken off already to go pack. I remember that when I finally gotten hold of everybody and I went back to Eileen's room, everybody was piled into Eileen in your room, and they were all talking, and then Stephen and Johnny said that they were going to stay.
Yeah.
I had lost my phone, so I had left it in the room where my workshop was, and I had gone downstairs to look for it, and by the time I had gotten back up, everybody was packed up and ready to go.
Yeah.
So it was pretty fast. Probably about 20, 15 minutes. Yeah, my first thought was, am I going to be able to get home? Because as soon as I had heard about the evacuation, I knew the roads were going to be packed. And I thought, you know, maybe I could sneak in like a back way through Huncut or something. But shortly after that, I had heard that people were getting huge fines for going the back roads because of the evacuation. After getting through and dropping off the other kids in our car, I ended up having to go home with Eileen because there was no possible way to get back into Oroville at that time.
And where was your family?
They were up by like Kelly Ridge area. They were in a safe location, so I wasn't like too panicking about that. But it was the longest I'd ever been away from my daughter, and I was really worried about how she was handling it. And on top of that, the woman we were living with, my husband's great-grandmother, had passed away that night. And the coroners weren't able to pick her up because they were closed because of the evacuation.
I'm sorry. I just have to interject here because this was a really crazy and tragic thing that happened on our way home. We're flying up the I-5 trying to get back to Chico before the dam is going to burst. And I was in my car with one youth, and Amy was following in another car with my colleague Eileen when she got this text from her husband.
On the ride home, my husband had texted me and said, I think my grandmother's dead. And I thought he was joking because we've had this conversation before where we weren't sure how she was doing. And so I told him it wasn't funny to joke like that in this situation, and he sent me pictures of the EMTs.
How did you feel then?
I was really pissed off that he'd sent me the pictures and heartbroken. You know, we'd moved in to take care of her, and we were only there like 3 months before she went, and they told her that she was going to make it to 100, and she made it to 2 weeks before her 97th birthday. They eventually were able to get a coroner up to pick her up, but it took like 6 hours.
Yeah.
She died at, I think it was like 6:40, and they weren't able to pick up till about 1 o'clock that night. Mm. Yeah, so basically they just were like, just don't go in the house until we can pick her up. We had my little brother, my daughter, my dad, his girlfriend, and my husband all staying in the one bedroom mother-in-law suite until the coroners were able to pick her up. She had already had a previous heart condition where two of her chambers weren't working, so the shock of hearing about the evacuation and all of the commotion going on around her overstimulated her heart, and her heart went out. It was very devastating in our car. We were all girls, so emotions were heightened. It was me worrying about getting to my family and worrying about if they were going to be okay, because I was looking up reports and they were saying total dam failure, not just the spillway. So I was freaking out about that. And then one of the other girls in our car, she was worried because her dad was refusing to leave. I was really trying to stay calm because my mentee was in the car and I didn't want to freak her out. I knew she would be safe as long as we were able to get her back to Chico, so I really didn't want to scare her. But it was also, I had a lot of trouble like staying quiet because I was crying so hard, and I was trying to be quiet so she didn't know I was so upset.
Yeah. And that night you had to stay with Eileen. And then what about the next day?
The next day, we had gone into town. Eileen had to deal with some emergency crisis with one of the other mentees. And we ended up volunteering at the fairgrounds. We set up some art projects for the kids there. And it was an overall pretty good day. Everybody was all fixated on me not being able to celebrate my birthday. It was my birthday. We don't typically celebrate anyways. So it wasn't a huge loss for me, but it was harder being away from my family, and going to the fairgrounds and being able to help out with the other kids and seeing the other kids, and I actually got to hold a baby. So it was really calming to me, and it helped me stay focused so I didn't overanalyze and over like freak out about not being with my kid. It was a little bit sad to see all of the kids who were like missing home and stuff. When we got there, it seemed really like empty, even though it was full of people. Nobody was doing anything. The kids were just kind of like rambling around and sitting on their parents' cots and stuff, and they weren't really able to do anything. So when we set up, we had, I'd probably say like 20 kids in the first 10 minutes. We'd see the kids come back and go and come back. And they'd paint more pictures. And they really liked painting SpongeBob. It was really uplifting to see all of the kids who were still extremely happy in such, you know, sadness. They were bored and rowdy, and yeah. It's not a good combination.
Yeah. So how many days did it take for you to see your family again?
I got to go home on Valentine's Day, so that Tuesday, probably around like 6 or 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Like, I think I was picked up probably around 3, but the people who gave me a ride home had to stop at their apartment, and they packed up some more of their stuff before taking me home.
Yeah.
So it was practically 5 whole days before I had gotten to see my kid because of the conference.
What was the reunion like?
She was stuck to me like glue. She'd probably still be if I didn't drop her off in the daycare today. She wouldn't let me out of her sight. When she slept, I had to be in the room with her. She didn't know what had happened in the home, but she knew something was different, and she knew mom was gone, and it definitely upset her. Last night was the first night we had gone to stay in our actual house. We were staying at a travel trailer. That way we weren't too on top of each other with everybody else there. And she, last night, was just so glad to be in her own bed that when she woke up crying because she had been scared awake by the storm, she didn't even want to get out of her bed. She just laid herself back down and told me, "No, I don't want you," and went back to sleep.
Just kind of looking forward, what are your feelings about just living in Oroville now and, you know, having a family there? And
well, I've never liked living in Oroville. Not that it's a bad place. It's just, it's where I grew up, and I've had a lot of bad experiences there, you know, going through foster care and all that. So I've always been looking to move out of town. With Marshall's great-grandmother passing away, we are actually being forced to move. So we're now looking in Paradise. It wasn't inspired by the spillway, but I know I'll feel safer when I'm higher up and away from something that can go terribly wrong like that. I won't have to worry about the dam breaking anymore. There was a couple times where I had to run into town to buy milk or to get more food because we had 12 people in our home and we were feeding a lot of people, so there was a lot of times where I had to go into town. And then last Friday, I know we were cleared for the evacuation, but I had to go to Paradise for an OB appointment. I had an ultrasound, and I was terrified that when I went up there, I wouldn't be able to get back home. So I actually made my whole family come with me, and they were all sitting in the lobby while I was getting the pictures taken of the baby.
I wasn't sure if you were going to announce that or not.
I didn't mean to.
Do you want me to leave that part in or take it out?
You can leave it in.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much everybody knows except for his grandmother. Mm-hmm. And his grandmother's on a cruise for 10 days, so.
Were you more emotional because of your pregnancy?
I was really stressed out because of it. My first pregnancy was actually a miscarriage due to stress, and all of my pregnancies since then have been high risk. So I was really stressed out that being stressed out was going to make me lose the baby. But he's pretty strong, or it's pretty strong.
Oh, do we even get to know that?
No, we don't. I'm just assuming because that's what I want.
I think you're pretty strong, actually.
When I have to be. Mm-hmm. I definitely did not feel strong on the car ride home, but I don't know. It's like, are you going to break down? Or are you going to keep going? And you just got to keep going. You can't just stop.
Amy is back home now, as are most of the 180,000 people who were evacuated that weekend. I was really proud of how all our youth reacted to the emergency, especially Amy, who, as you heard, already has so much on her plate. Anyway, that's my story. Congratulations, Amy. Happy belated birthday. Glad we're all back home safe.
And we're all glad you're back home safe as well. Josh Indar, Amy, big shout out. That was a wonderful piece. And we're going to hear from our correspondent here, Mark, man. Give us some insights, some comments on that piece we just heard, Mark.
Yeah, well, I mean, on the bright side, someone told me a joke about how it's interesting that nowadays Oroville is actually more famous than Chico, seeing as how people around the world have actually been listening in on this story because it was so huge. It's become an international story. I think because it was such a huge, could have been such a huge catastrophe if it actually broke. And I thought it was going to, the way it sounded. I was just sitting in a Chico Starbucks Facebooking when I heard about it. I don't even remember exactly what I was doing, but someone else informed me of it. And I started getting really scared, like, wow, I can't even fathom the thought that, you know, in a few, like an hour from now, Oroville, a place I've been for a long time, is going to be flooded. And who knows how far that will stretch. Like, am I all right? What's going on? And that same night, you know, a whole bunch of cars coming through, you know, because of the evacuation order. And Yeah, but you know, when a catastrophe like that hits, I really like the sentiment that, you know, you just got to keep going and you got to keep trying to make it. One other comment, though, is that very night, actually, something I don't want to make people angry, but there was actually something that kind of struck me that same night. While I was on Facebook, like mere minutes after I heard about that, I saw like a political post, like a blog or something, titled like "Our Governor Brown is anti-Trump Brown is asking the government for money," and it was like a politically charged post, and it was like, it just made me angry that people kind of, you know, thought to be spiteful and that sort of method. Mere minutes after this huge catastrophe that had, you know, actual human consequences, and it bothered me, especially since a certain family member of mine actually was commenting on it when it was like agreeing with that. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No apologies needed, man. That was kind of a crazy night. I saw that post, Mark. You and I are friends on Facebook, and it was a crazy post, man.
Yeah, I can't believe that was actually posted.
All right, then. Thanks so much, Mark, for your comments on our two pieces today. On two of the, did you do all three? I guess you did all three, right?
Yeah, I did three.
I got
3 cents in.
3 cents.
He gave me 2 cents, but I got three.
We pass around pennies to represent minutes. But anyway, thanks for listening in. And we're going to turn it over now to our musical guest. We have in the studio, Kay Alba. Welcome to KZFR, Kay Alba.
Yeah, hello.
Okay, Albert, tell us a little bit about your Happy Growly artwork and how they can find your beautiful prints and the stuff that you do before we get into your song, Beatles song.
Of course. I'm a local artist. I draw things for people, logos. I do chalk art. I do a lot of things. I have a Facebook page. It's at Happy Growly. It's like growl and with a Y at the end. And I'm going to play some Beatles songs.
Awesome. Yeah, she's an amazing artist, and I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to take you right into Beatle Nation, and I think we're going to play one during Beatle Nation. And we're all excited about it. So what do we got? What do we got coming up here, Kay? What's the first song?
It's called I'm So Tired.
I'm So Tired on KZFR, People Power Radio.
Are we good? All right. Sorry. I'm so tired, I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired, my mind is on the brink. I wonder, should I get up and fix myself a drink? Oh no, no, I'm so tired, I don't know what to do.
Give it up for Kay. You're going to take us right into Beatle Nation, man. The Beatle Nation people are here in the studio.
Oh,
so we're going to transition the mic over to them, and they want you to do another song, and they got some questions for you.
Oh, totally.
You're on People Power Radio.
Am I still? Okay. For those Beatle Nation people, at the end of this song, John Lennon says, "Paul is dead, man. I miss him, I miss him, I miss him." Backwards. This song.
No.
That last one.
Well, right. Welcome back to Beatle Nation on KZFR with your host, Lucia.
And other host, Claire.
And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, a listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.
And Beatle Nation is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by The Printed Image, specializing in custom screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. Using the latest technology in their state-of-the-art building, The Printed Image provides custom screen printing, embroidery, and promotional products for business, organization, or special